Welcome everyone, this is our fifth episode of the Science and Healthcare Sustainability Podcast. We've been quite UK-centric so far, I would say. We've had guests from healthcare, manufacturing and laboratories in the UK. We're very lucky today that we've got a guest coming from Europe, so from Germany. So we're going to get a great take on how things are progressing in terms of sustainability in Europe. And it's another manufacturer of a great product range as well, so really looking forward to this one.
Okay, well, nice to meet you, Joel. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for the invitation. Thanks for having me today.
No problem at all. First question we ask everybody who comes on is, what is sustainability to you? What does sustainability mean to you?
Oh, so we're starting with the easy questions. So that's a big one. In the end, it's just a necessary thing we have to include in everything we do in our world. So we see massive issues in healthcare, in food supply chains, in having heavy weather extremes. So sustainability is that one thing that needs to be thought whenever we do something new and whenever we change something, so generally spoken.
Yeah, no, good answer. And obviously your speciality, based on your history, is in laboratories. What's the scale of the problem in laboratories, do you feel?
Depends on what kind of laboratory. So scientific laboratories, academia is one thing. This is where we have a issue with not so much plastic in terms of the mass, but in terms of the variability. So it's a lot of materials, a lot of different things. So into a benchtop bin, you have maybe 10 or 20 or even more different items. So when it comes to downstream applications, recycling, it becomes very difficult to separate these and create some value. Then there's these high throughput commercial labs where you see microplates, a truckload going through the machines and the automation every day. They produce a high mass of plastic waste, but very often it's highly sorted and there is a lot of potential in using this waste downstream. And then there's bioprocessing from the biopharma industry, which is a completely different league, where you have single-use bags, tubings, and where a lot of very complex items go through every batch. For example, in vaccine manufacturing, if you have a complicated process with downstream applications in chromatography, for example, you might have a big chromatography column that is multi-use, but you have 5 or 6 buffers that are all in a single-use bags that are connected to the column, and then you end up having these bags and all the tubings and all the connectors made from 5 or 6 different materials that go into waste, and it's very difficult to separate these materials downstream. And therefore, bioprocessing is having maybe the biggest impact on the pollution or on the plastic waste in the industry.
Yeah, sounds like a good place to start to target. You know, like you say, research laboratories doing different things every other day is going to be difficult for them to implement changes that have a big impact. Whereas, as you said, the bioprocessing and even diagnostic labs as well, where they're doing the same test day in, day out with the same plastic, where they would be probably good targets to talk to about changing to some of these sustainable products that we're going to go onto later. So,
we don't get an opportunity to ask this question very often, but how do you think Germany compares to the rest of the world in terms of how big a problem, how they see it as a problem and how they're helping to combat it?
In terms of the use of single-use plastic, I think Germany is one of the biggest polluters in the world, both in the industry, because we just have a lot of industry, a lot of high-throughput industry, a lot of manufacturing industry, also in private. So households in Germany are among, I think, the top 3 polluters in terms of plastic waste in all Europe. There's a lot of awareness, but awareness is not solving issues. We do have a pretty good recycling industry for the private pollution, and we have very strong regulations for lab and industry waste. So therefore most of the lab waste is going into incineration, causing a lot of carbon emissions. What we have done in Germany in the past years is we've been substituting power plants that were running on coal or even on oil by power plants that are running on rubbish, on, for example, plastic waste. This is usually mostly fossil-based too, but at least we're not throwing plastic into our rivers. But I think Germany is still among the biggest polluters in the world.
Yeah, so we spent time Analytica last year.
Medica.
Year, and specifically trying to find sustainable products, and they were few and far between at that exhibition. You know, talking to people from countries like China, America didn't seem that wasn't high on the agenda. Europe maybe a little bit more. So we feel in the UK we're kind of quite focused on it at the moment, or that's our perception anyway. So it's great to hear that Germany is there as well, and specifically companies like yourself who are bringing in products to market that can not only improve the results and the throughput, but also obviously the green credentials of the people who use it. Are you seeing a change in the perception and the attitude of scientists in Germany towards sustainability? Is that sort of movement growing?
Yeah, definitely. So when I was in the lab, no one was really thinking about sustainability. So even for me personally, at this time when I was a bachelor or master student, this was more a badge of honor when my benchtop bin was full of Piper tips at the end of a workday, because it showed how busy I've been. And yeah, when I was a PhD student, I think that the students already had some awareness for the issue, and this has been growing and growing. I can't really say why this has been changing. I think plastic waste has got a lot of attention in also the main media, and maybe also more in the heads. But also it's a bit of a chick and egg question. Is there more coverage in the media because there's more awareness, or vice versa?
Okay, so tell us a little bit about Green Elephant. What is it that you guys do, and how you're helping?
So we're making single-use plastics for labs and for bioprocessing industry, and we make it from a plant-based material. We make it from PLA, polylactic acid, and the two product lines we currently have is lab consumables. We started with a microplate, a 96 well plate we launched last year, and this is a very easy substitute for polystyrene plates. So you can use them for ELISA, for fluorescence assays, luminescence assays. It was designed to be a like-to-like substitute for conventional plastic microplates. The nice thing about the material is the material properties are quite similar to polystyrene. So in terms of chemical resistance, in terms of optical properties, it's very comparable. And the second, a bit more complicated products we have are bioreactors for adherent cells. So for IPS, MSCs, we have some customers using it in viral vector manufacturing with HEC293. And this is actually the product we started a company on. So these bioreactors or vessels are designed for mass production of these cells in an industrial scale. The gold standard today for industrial processes of adherent cells are multi-trace stacks. So you can imagine these as gigantic petri dishes that are glued to each other, 10 or even 40 layers, and they're just horrible in terms of handling, because you have to tilt them in three axes to get the media in and out, and to get the cells in and out, and to get the washing buffer and the trypsin and everything. So these are horribly time consuming for the operators, and they're very heavy. Then there was a thing called roller bottles. They've been used more in the past. It was just a flask that was laying on the side, a little bit of cell culture media, and it was rolling on a roller device, and the cells have been growing on the inside of the flask. They are easy to handle, and they are also a dynamic system, so oxygen transfer is better, but the surface area is not so big. So what we did was combining these two approaches. We took a roller bottle and put in two internal structures. The one is an Archimedean screw, so by rotation, media is transferred through the Archimedes screw. In the middle, there's a tube where it can flow back, and therefore we have a very gentle but very effective mixing of the cell culture media. And the second structure are concentric cylinders that are massively increasing the surface area for the cells to grow. Because the cells, they grow as a single layer, so if you need a lot of cells, you need a lot of surface. And yeah, in our bioreactors, we call them the cell screw, and they are available from lab scale to industrial scale. We're solving the mixing issue as well as the scaling issue.
And what kind of cells can you grow within your plastics?
Everything that grows adherently. So okay. I think most customers are using it for IPS and HAC and MSCs. But there is also applications in for liver cells or cardiomyocytes. Everything that needs a surface to grow.
And how much, in terms of percentage wise, how much does that increase the surface area of a standard bottle?
Compared to a standard bottle, it's 12 to 15 times. Compared to these stacked systems, it's the same surface area, but on a way smaller footprint. So 4 to 5 times reduction of the footprint, and also about 30 times reduction in the handling time. And this is really, and also
huge.
In terms of the weight. So if you have a 10-layer stack, it will sum up with the cell culture media to 10, maybe 12 kilograms. You can do the same in a cell screw that is at 2 kilograms. So no more
backpack. So the sort of environmental savings of, you know, when you deliver them, you're going to deliver more surface area in a smaller van effectively, you know, more fewer car, footprint. You're going to use less media presumably as well. There's going to be a media saving there.
Less media, but also less more raw material. So for example, to make 10,000 square centimeters, we need about 80% less plastic to make the vessel compared to that stack systems.
Yeah. And it's plant-based as well.
And then it's plant-based, so yeah. Cutting the carbon footprint by 50% again. So the cell screw 10K compares to a cell stack with 10 layer or with 10,000 square centimeters, having about 90% carbon footprint reduction.
Amazing. And then less space in an incubator, so literally less CO2, less handling,
less energy for the HVAC because the facility can be smaller. Yeah.
Wow. Amazing. And where did you come up with this idea then? How did it start?
Oh, where do good ideas come from my playground? So I've actually been with my niece on a water playground, and there was an Archimedean screw where you could rotate it and transport water against gravity by rotation. And I've been thinking about how to scale up adherent cell manufacturing in that time a lot. And there was always the big problem of shear forces. And I thought, oh, that's a geometry, that's a transportation system that would solve all the issues, the shear forces, the surface for the cells to grow on. We should make bioreactors with Archimedean screws.
Wow. And were you a PhD student at the time, or what were you currently doing when you came up with this idea?
I was a PhD student, but this was not my PhD project. But I have originally a background in genetics and synthetic biology, so really started as a biologist in my early career. Did a PhD in bioprocess engineering, ended up being the only biologist in an institute full of engineers who regarded the cells as a black box that just has to do cell things. And I was the biologist who never heard about KLA or DO or something like this before, and being confronted with all these engineering issues. And that was a good combination, because then you come up with new ideas.
Absolutely. And how did you go about funding a company that manufactures? That can't be cheap.
Sorry, can you repeat that, please?
Yeah, how did you go about funding the company? You know, you're a PhD student at the time. How did you then get to the point where you're now, you know, a staff of probably 20 people, you know, manufacturing?
Yeah. So first thing, filing a patent that was done via the university I've been at, and trying to get grants, didn't really work out at this time. And I went to industry. So I went to a big pharma company in tech transfer, validation, GMP manufacturing, and still with a very small team, we've been working on prototypes and getting the basic idea running, showing a proof of principle. This was done in my basement with a 3D printer and in a lab at the university where we had a bachelor student who could run first experiments in prototypes. And then we went to a business plan competition, been among the winners, and all the winners were allowed for a pitch event. And at this pitch event, we found the first investors who invested in Green Elephant. And then it went quite quickly because we've been able to get a first pre-seed round, hired a handful of people, developed the product, got it to market, and yeah, scaled from that point.
Amazing.
Cool. What's been the biggest problems? I love stories of startups and things that have come from an idea, such as being at the playground. What's been the biggest kind of hurdle or the biggest challenge for you guys so far? Has it been attracting the funding, the grants,
yeah,
or
definitely.
Something further along?
Yeah, funding was difficult because there's a bit of a funding gap because there is not so much venture capital for early stage, at least in Germany, and there's also not much public grants for transitioning from basic research into applied research or for building a product. So there's that tech transfer funding gap we have in Germany and probably across all of Europe, and that was a big challenge, getting the first money in.
Yeah, and how's the market responded? Because often we term these products no-brainers. The way you described it earlier, you would assume that everyone should be using it. Is that the case, or have you found resistance to people to change to these things?
First, it's about pain and timing. So people need to have a certain pain with the solutions they're currently using, and then it's timing. And sometimes the pain doesn't need to be too big when the timing is right. So we're currently targeting a lot of companies in the cell and gene therapy field because they have to set up their processes anyway, and they're looking for the best methods, for the best equipment, for the best technology that is out there at the moment. It's way harder to turn around a vaccine company that has a validated process for 15 years. It's going to be almost impossible to change their process. But if someone is looking for the most compact or the most easy handling or the most scalable systems or something that is just more robust, then we get very good response.
New manufacturers or startups would be interested, I guess, as you said, because they're not overcoming this process they already have in place. How about researchers? Are they keen to take it on because they get more cells and act more sort of sustainably? Is that enough to get researchers on board?
No, actually, that's a little bit of a gap because the researchers often are very focusing on the very early clinical results or on the biology, but not so much on the process engineering. And that's actually quite an issue because we see scalability issues in the cell and gene therapy field a lot. And if you miss the point of choosing a scalable manufacturing system, you end up with a system that is very manual handling needed. That is, and then you have very expensive, manufacturing. So, and we see in mm-hmm. gene therapy, for example, manufacturing costs are ridiculously high, and the price per dose for CAR T or other treatments is 6-digit, 7-digit sometimes. And this is a significant part of that is the high manufacturing costs. And we really need to educate the early stage scientists that are working on the new therapies to think about manufacturing as well, because it's not only safety and efficacy, it's also the manufacturability that is bringing success for these new therapies.
Okay, so you need early adoption really right at the start of the inception to benefit later on when it does scale. And what you're saying, I hope, is that if researchers were to adopt it early, their product or their process would be more attractive to investors and to private equity and things like that later on, because it is so scalable so easily.
It's not more attractive. It's I think it's the foundation for commercial success of a therapy. To get it approved by the FDA is only the first step. It's not success. Success is when the new therapy is accessible to the people. And if you can sell only 100 per year, you're probably not going to have commercial success with that product.
Yeah.
You need to deliver it to tens of thousands of people.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, going back to kind of your manufacturing side, what's the most wasteful thing that you feel that you guys do? And what's the kind of most impactful change that you've utilized having realized that? Sorry for the tough question.
In our own facility, I think our own lab is probably the biggest thing. We use our own products for cell culture and analytics, but we are still dependent on buying third-party products that are not in our portfolio, but we need to use a lot, and this is causing a lot of waste.
Okay. Going through the life cycle of your product then, obviously you're trying to mitigate as much as you can in terms of the manufacturing. Once the customer has it in their hand and they've used it, what's the disposal method? Can it be recycled, or does it need to be incinerated, or what's the end of life of your products?
The products can be recycled. We are working with a partner that has been testing both product lines for recyclability, so this is technically possible. I know that in Germany, PLA also can go into the recycling streams. So we have that yellow bin and you can put it in there. The question is, what have you done with it before? Did it come in contact with infectious material, with GMOs? Then you have to incinerate it. And then there's the regulatory requirements to not to recycle it.
Yeah. Would it hold up to being autoclaved or sterilized chemically?
So we do gamma irradiation. It can't be autoclaved. It's not heat stable. But you can autoclave it before recycling. So this would work. So you can if it's a GMO, I assume you can autoclave it to inactivate the GMO and then give it to recycling. That should be feasible.
Brilliant. Okay, great. Obviously, again, it seems like a bit of a no-brainer for certain customers to switch to. What specific objections have you had? Is it the cost, or is it just too different to what they're doing? And how have you overcome those?
Depends on what product we're looking for. So even before we started the company, Green Elephant, we've been talking to first potential customers or just getting a voice of the market to understand if that product is really needed. And we've been aware of the sustainability aspects of the cell culture bioreactors, and we pitched them, and people told us, yes, this is great technology, this is what we're looking for, but guys, the sustainability, you're 10 years too early. We didn't have to do anything about this. Somehow the awareness for plastic waste in the industry changed. And turned out we've been only 2 years too early, not 10. But this was kind of funny, really, to see people saying sustainability is nothing that's going to happen in our industry. We can to work how we always did.
So off the back of that, do you think that labs can ever truly be carbon neutral? Or do you think that there's an element of waste that is just inevitable that you'll never get rid of?
Really carbon neutral? That's really difficult. It's not only the plastic waste, it's all the chemicals, all the supply chains you have to consider to make. There's refrigeration, there's always shipping involved. Really carbon neutral, I think, is so we would need to remove all animal-based components. We would need to run electricity completely on renewable resources. Even the biopolymers we have do have some at least equivalence of carbon emissions, because yes, it's made from plants and plants take out CO2 from the atmosphere, but there's always a truck transporting it and a truck is running on diesel, and we can't remove this at this time. So not in the near future that a lab can be really carbon neutral. But is this really the important thing? I think there is a certain budget on carbon emissions we have as a society or as a world. I think more important to thinking about getting out the last 10 or 5% of carbon savings is to get the first 80 or 90% of carbon savings. And these are usually way more easier than the last ones. And if we could remove our carbon emissions in all sectors, across transportation, across food supply chains, and across laboratories by 70 or 80%, the issues we're going towards would be way smaller than it looks like today.
Yeah, that's a great answer. I totally agree. Obviously, you've got experience working in the lab and obviously running a business that's focusing on sustainability within labs. Other than the plates and the cell screws, have you got any examples of other products that you've seen people implement or you would recommend that they implement to reduce their carbon footprint in the lab?
There's a company I really like. They're called Greenova, and they have like dishwashers for pipe tips and microplates. Yeah. And you can validate your cleaning process to a certain point that you know it's going to be DNA free or endotoxin free or whatever you need to. And I think this is really, really impressive. So reusing things is always much better than using it only once or twice. So, because again, the carbon footprint reduces with every reuse.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we've seen those guys at exhibitions, and the instrument looks really good as well. Yeah. It's a nice piece of kit you want in your lab.
So do you feel that sustainability is something that's worth paying for, or should it always be should there always be a cost benefit to it? Do you think it's going to be pretty difficult for people to take on these products if it's going to cost them a little bit more in the long run?
If sustainability is the only USP of your product, pricing is definitely going to be a thing. We see this for the microplates, and especially for the transparent plates, where you have a lot of very cheaply produced products on the market. It's difficult for us to be competitive. It's easier when there is some added value on the product. For the cell screw, where we have technical benefits that are outperforming the systems that are on the market, the sustainability becomes less important in terms of choice of the buyers, because then they buy for the quality and for the performance, and the sustainability becomes a little bit the cherry on top, but still it's important. And it's in... Yes. So I would say the question is, should people pay a premium for more sustainable products, or maybe should it maybe even vice versa? Should there
that would have been the easy way for me to ask the question.
Yeah. Then you would need some kind of regulation that, so we in the EU, we have a CO2 tax that could be applied to lab waste that goes into incineration, and this would add a certain price increase for fossil-based materials. This could be one way of doing a regulation of not so sustainable products. Difficult to answer this question, and I think at the moment there is no clear path. What's the best way to get the people buying more sustainable products? I think quality is always important, and offering the highest quality you can. So our products, they're all made in Germany with very short supply chains. There's other ways of, even if it's not technical benefits, there is, for example, supply chain security we can offer. And this can be, there can be a certain premium on the supply chain security as well, because we're not dependent on getting raw material from Asia. We have our complete supply chain based in Europe. So it's not going to happen like during the pandemic that we run out of material and can't deliver to our customers anymore.
Yeah, no, I think you're right to highlight quality there. Often when you do buy a cheap product, there's hidden drawbacks to that in terms of repeat experiments or failures and those kind of things. And you highlighted earlier with the sales group, I don't know how it compares in cost case to case with the cell stack, but I would imagine if you did the calculations further down the line in terms of yield and those kind of calculations, you probably find it actually works out more cost effective, and the other products are maybe a false economy on the sort of list price that you pay. So, you know, if we can make sure that customers are aware that there is this calculation to be done in terms of the actual value, not just the price that it says on a piece of paper, I think that's a good way to go. With that in mind, is there any other products you're thinking of launching in the future that you can talk about, or any plans to expand the company?
Expanding the company, yes, definitely. What we're working on is just a lot of things in parallel. In terms of the bioreactors, our next step is offering it as a closed system. Currently, it has a screw cap. Next stage will having a screw cap that comes with tubings and aseptic connectors, so it can be really connected to bags or other liquid handling systems. So this really allows closed system and GMP manufacturing. GMP is also something we're currently working on. We have our in-house facility qualified. We're currently running validation production runs to get the last third-party certificates and validation data for the product in. So this is something we're hardly working on as well. And then there is a really cool technology we're currently developing, is turning this flask, the cell screw that is currently still needed to be manually handled, fully automated. So we're with a partner developing a device that is a integrated automated device automating the whole cell manufacturing process, from seeding the cells, going into perfusion, getting in sensors for all the process parameters, and reducing the handling time from many hours per batch to a few minutes.
Wow. I mean, that's going to make such a difference, isn't it, when you're trying to target these big players, as you said at the beginning of the conversation. That's where the big impact is going to be made within science, is the people churning through lots and lots of the same thing. So hopefully you can tap into the sort of large producers who need automation to compete and bring the price down. As you scale, do you think the price of your product will come down? Will the economies of scale help you as well to offer your product at a more cost-effective rate?
For the injection molded plates, yes, definitely. And I think for the cell screw, as you said, the worth is not only the price you pay, but also the performance, the process robustness, the scalability. A lot of issues we solve are in the price, so price is not an issue here. And for the standard consumables, there are definitely economies of scale that will help us to reduce the price for the microplates.
Brilliant. For the plates, the robots have any issues? Are they fairly robust plates? Are they automation friendly?
Yeah, sure. They're automation friendly. They're designed to the ANSI standard. It has been shown that they've been compatible with 60, 70 devices already. didn't see any issues. So no, we have a very good standard of harmonization and standardization for these kind of products, and we meet them. Yep.
Brilliant. Any plans to go smaller well sizes to 384 or anything beyond that?
New products will always be in the, or at least for the next years, in the cell culture settings. So rather going to the high throughput things, we will rather go to 6 well plates, 12 well plates, to stay in the cell culture environment.
Yeah.
Cell culture ecosystem.
Fantastic.
Brilliant. Are there any other sustainable products or services you'd recommend to scientists aside from your own?
Yeah, as I said, the dishwashers by Greenova. What else is there? Sometimes it's not only the material. Sometimes it's really looking at the supply chain. I know there are people working on getting the production back to Europe, so you're not depending on flying products around the globe. Nitrile gloves, there are some great changes in the way they're manufactured and the recyclability. And then there's also programs looking on the downstream applications. So how can waste be separated? How can waste be collected? How can waste be recycled? It's worth looking at these initiatives we see around in the lab ecosystem.
Yeah, you touched on shipping there. Obviously, plates are manufactured, the products are manufactured in Germany, which is great for distribution within Europe, particularly central mainland Europe, but also the UK, where many of our products are coming from sort of America, Mexico, China, and further afield. So it's great that we can sort of tap into a plate that's not only plant-based, but also is not being shipped halfway around the world. Where do you see your sort of uptake? Is it mainly Europe that people are embracing your product, or have you got products being used in America or the Far East?
Yeah, North America is definitely a very important market for us. Not so much in Asia and Middle East yet, but still we're a growing company. So we're currently...
Yeah.
15 people. Our sales activities are based on Central Europe, UK, and North America at the moment. We're looking for distributors around the world, and yeah, trying to increase our impact we have. But obviously, it's the easiest for sell the products in markets we know best.
Yeah, I'm interested in the North America aspect. Is their interest purely technical and the benefits of the cell screw, or are they also interested in sustainability? Or is it just the cherry on the top, as you described earlier?
No, especially it's a door opener, because it's really unique in the market to have these aspects and to communicate them. We see a highly intrinsically motivation of scientists and engineers trying to reduce the footprint of their labs, of the processes. So it's not that with Trump, all Americans are suddenly not interested in sustainability anymore. There is a lot of people that really care for the environment, for the planet, and they're among the scientists as well. And so, yes, sustainability is an important topic in the US as well.
Brilliant.
Great stuff. And where can people hear more about your products? Where's the best place, apart from this podcast?
There's our website, greenelephantbiotech.com. And we do quite some work on LinkedIn. So my personal profile or the profiles of my co-founder or CTO or even the company profile, we have a lot of activities going on LinkedIn. So if you follow us there, we're going to keep updated. There's also a newsletter you can sign up on our website. This is not very spammy. I think it comes 4 times a year. So high quality content that we'd like to share and to inform.
Great. And you've got your own podcast as well, Joel. You want to tell people about that?
Yeah, but it's in German. So if you speak German, I'm hosting the Doppelhelix podcast.
Deutsch ist Quatsch.
Ist Quatsch. Yeah. No. I'm doing executive interviews with CEOs and CTOs from life science and biotech. We do deep dive into the core technologies of the companies and people around the companies. It's startups, but also companies that have been around for 15, 20 years or even longer. And across all fields of biotechnology. So we have healthcare and pharma applications, but also food applications, cultivated meat, diagnostics. So whatever you can do with a cell.
Amazing.
Brilliant.
And I'm sure you'll be able to convert it into English using AI one day, and we can like listen to your back catalog.
Yeah, it's not going to take more time. It's probably coming in a few years. I think Spotify is testing this actually already. Mostly converting it from English into other languages, but the other way around, someday will be possible.
Yeah. You mentioned lab-grown meat there. It's a big topic in the UK at the moment. It was on the national news yesterday. So several companies sort of explained to the public what it is and how they do it. So your products are suitable for that market as well, because obviously that's looking to be expanding over the next few years.
So a lot of products in the cultivated meat market are based on cell culture, and in the early days are based on adherent cells as well. And people have been looking into all kinds of solutions. So we have some customers in this field, but there is no way of scaling the processes to a industrial scale, to a commercial scale for food applications that are way more price sensitive than pharma applications if you keep with 2D systems or with adherent cells. The companies that manage their cells into 3D processing, into suspension in any way, and can control them and differentiate them in the way it's needed, I think that's the key challenge the companies have to go through. And the ones that manage these developments, they can scale to any scale. And yes, so I'm happy to support companies in their early days for proof of concepts. That's something at R&D scale where the sales crew can be the right product. For industrial scale, we're not the right solution. We're more suitable for small and medium scale pharma applications. The microplates, they can be used in any QC lab.
Okay, brilliant. And if people wanted to see your product, are you going to be at any exhibitions or trade shows this year that they can come and see you at?
Yeah, definitely. We're going to be at, let me count them down. So next week, we're going to be in London, Advanced Therapies by Terrapin. Then there's going to be the ISCT in New Orleans. Then probably the Medica and CPHI in Frankfurt.
Fantastic.
In October.
Excellent. Okay. Brilliant.
Very good. Well, thank you, Joel, very much for coming on and speaking to us. It's been fascinating, as usual. I always find it very fascinating. If you'd like to subscribe and like this podcast, you'll get more updates from more of our guests. Hit the bell icon and you won't miss an update. They're coming thick and fast at the moment. Plenty more people to speak to and interview. Thank you to CG Optic and also Lampadina Group for sponsoring the podcast, supplying the food and drink that we've already eaten. Thank you, Joel. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Joel. Before we go, Joel, last question that we always ask everyone, is there anyone else you'd recommend that we have on the podcast, someone that's inspired you or you think's doing good work within sustainability in science or healthcare?
Sure. There is a company in Germany, in Darmstadt. They're called BioVox, and they do medical-grade raw materials from biopolymers. So not only PLA, but a lot of other materials that can be used in medtech applications. And what they do is they provide the full validation package and qualification. So everything you need to know for going into a regulatory process with a biomaterial, they provide these validation package and the product knowledge or the material knowledge. So that's something someone you could invite to your podcast, but really worth looking into if you're into materials or looking what materials your next product could be made from.
Great tip. Thank you very much. And last question, if people want to try your products, can they buy samples, or is what's the best way to actually get the physical product in their lab and give it a go?
Yeah, just reach out to us via our website or LinkedIn. There are sample sizes that come for cheap money that gets you onboarded quite quickly. Depending on how difficult your application is, we provide some support, some handling, or required even some on-site support with the product. Yes, the microplates are not so complicated. We're happy to help and support you with the knowledge we have. Yeah, sample sizes can be ordered. Depending on the country where you're located, we can ship them directly to you, or we have a distributor that might is helping you with the import. But we should be able to bring the products to anyone around the world.
Fantastic. That's brilliant. Thank you so much, Joel. It's great to hear from you, and keep up the good work at Green Elephant.
Yeah, thank you too. Thanks for the invitation. Thanks for the interesting questions. Thank you.
No problem.
No problem at all.
Thanks, Joel.